What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Shot Wake Up. This is your weekly wildfire update. Across the nation, we've seen wetter, cooler weather in the western United States, slowing down most of the fire activity on these larger incidents that have developed over the last 2 weeks or so, being in Oregon, Washington, California, and these fires and complexes in Montana and Idaho that have really slowed down. The Great Lakes states have been very, very warm with not a lot of moisture, and they basically have the most potential right now for wildfire in our nation. And we'll cover some of that and the operational update coming up. We're also going to talk about an interesting story out of California. Tragic in its own right, but I find it interesting. And that's dealing with the LNU complex back in 2020, I believe it was. And then a bunch of investigators got involved, and it ended up leading to charges of murder in a case that goes back to that fire start. And it's this web of investigations and tracking a bunch of people's cell phones and figuring out where did this fire start and ultimately leading them to a murder and ended up to multiple murder charges that can be traced back to the start of these fires. We'll talk about that on the second segment, but first I want to talk about the news that came out with FEMA and how they have basically run out of money, which I find very, very fascinating. And some information was sent to me by Sharon over at the Smoky Wire. So thank you for that. Very interesting developments. And I've talked about this a lot before, especially when it comes down to the Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak fire that took place and FEMA came in to help the community recover. But as I've been writing on the Substack, there was $4 billion approved for that recovery effort, and it's something like $400,000. Maybe it's a little more at this point in time, but just a month ago, only $400,000 had been paid out to victims of those massive wildfires. And ultimately, those fires were caused by government actions. And then we talked about also on the Substack and on the podcast, the $700 from FEMA that was sent down to victims in the Maui fire, and this small, tiny amount that went out to residents from Lahaina, Maui. And there was an uproar saying, you know, where's the help? Where's the help? And what it's come down to is FEMA has basically run out of money. And that is incredibly shocking to me because, as always, it seems like there's money available for everything except for things like this. When it comes to wildland firefighter pay or helping people in the United States in disaster areas, there just always seems to be a lack of money for those sorts of things. And there's been a lot of controversy down in Hawaii with people saying that employees of FEMA have been staying in five-star resorts while they're down there. And there just seems to be a lot of wasteful spending on their side. But the current administration is saying that they've run out of money because of how horrible the wildfire season has been and how horrible the hurricane season has been. So because of climate change, they just have run out of money. What I find ironic is it rained over Burning Man this last weekend. If you don't know what that is, it's this massive festival of basically debauchery, but I'm not against it. Like, if people want to go to Burning Man, feel free to do so. I just personally haven't had a lot of high quality experiences when I go to festivals of that nature, kind of that EDM type environment. But point being, it rained and it flooded out the festival and they sent FEMA in and FEMA declared it a disaster zone. So it seems like there's money for Burning Man folks who have been trapped in the rain. And the population of Burning Man is a lot of like very wealthy tech people. They go to it. And then, of course, you just have the rest of the festival goers there as well. But there are a lot of high-profile people there, and that's pretty well known. And it rained a lot, don't get me wrong. There was a lot of rain that came down. But we're saying that FEMA ran out of money and can't help people in disasters, and they're cutting off funding from past disasters. But we're sending FEMA into the Burning Man Festival in the middle of the desert, where people just do a bunch of ketamine, DMT, mushrooms, acid, and walk around and listen to electronic music while they burn effigies. So we have money for that. Let's dive into this article a little bit that gives us details on how much money they need and where it's going to go from here. And now it's kind of come down to what it is with the firefighter pay, because Congress is still out of session. If you are unaware, they've been on vacation for a little over a month now. And there's also this threat of government shutdown after September 30th, which is no surprise. It just seems like that's par for the course now every year. But it says that the Biden administration has stopped helping states rebuild from past disasters with money from the federal government's main emergency fund, which is nearing depletion from dozens of storms and wildfires this year. Now remember, the Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak fire happened well over a year ago, and those folks are still waiting for relief. And now the administration is saying we're going to stop spending money on past emergencies. So they delayed paying these victims well over a year, and now they're saying, whoa, sorry, we ran out of money, so we're just not going to even pay you anymore because we have to focus on current emergencies. It's falling apart, people. It's falling apart. It says the restrictions will put pressure on Congress to approve the president's August 10th request for $12 billion in emergency money to replenish the fund. Speaking to reporters at the White House, Biden stopped short of vowing that the federal government would provide the funds during the current disaster season. Under the new spending restrictions, the federal disaster fund can be spent only to address life-threatening emergencies such as Hurricane Idalia, which swept into the northern Florida Gulf Coast early Wednesday. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency administrator, her name is Deanne Criswell, said that the White House on Tuesday is using its remaining disaster funds only for critical response for efforts to Idalia and the Maui fires. And Burning Man. Also Burning Man. FEMA said in an internal memo obtained by Politico's E&E News that its disaster fund is approaching exhaustion and that restrictions are needed due to the current disaster environment. Just a side note, it's the slowest wildfire season since 1998. Just to throw that out there. The agency imposed the spending restrictions on Tuesday with little to no notice. It said it had intended to provide at least 10 days' notice of the shutoff of funds, but had to act immediately to address two simultaneous major disasters, including the Maui fires and Hurricane Idalia. The restriction known as immediate needs funding limits FEMA from spending disaster funds on life-saving measures such as clearing debris from roads, maintaining services such as healthcare and water, and providing emergency housing for displaced individuals. The restrictions could temporarily halt thousands of projects by states to rebuild facilities and infrastructure that were damaged and destroyed in disasters in the past and decades long ago. So, already, what a mess. What an absolute mess this is. You have states that have been promised these funds, approved by Congress. The question, again, is where did all the money go? Like, where did all the money go? Because this stuff was already approved by Congress to be spent, and now they're saying we're out of the money that was approved. Maybe it was inflated away. I don't know. They misjudged the cost of it all, but I highly doubt that that's 100% the case. So anybody who was in a disaster in the past, good luck, you're on your own, and we're going to focus on what's happening now, even though we promised you relief. And again, this is why folks in Maui have made such a huge deal out of not wanting FEMA there and saying that FEMA is a complete wreck, because all you have to do, like all you have to do is read my Substack and realize that FEMA promises all of these communities to rebuild, and then they let a year or two go by. Like, it's not immediate. They let it linger for a little bit, and then they say, oh, no, we don't have any money. Sorry, you're on your own. Congress has been in recess since early August and unable to act on any requests to replenish this disaster fund. The Senate returns on September 5th, and the House returns on September 12th. It says lawmakers are already facing a teeming agenda when they return, including the need to reach a deal to keep the government operating past September 30th, despite deep partisan disagreements about spending. Yeah, all they do up in Washington, D.C. is bicker and argue with each other and then go out to five-star restaurants and drink cocktails with the same people that they were arguing with 5 minutes previous. Nothing ever gets done. It says a coalition of major government associations wrote a letter Tuesday to congressional leaders urging them to act swiftly in approving the emergency funds and warning that without extra money, recovery projects will grind to a halt. So again, it's just threat, threat, threat. Have to pass this. What are we going to do? And this is where we get to the ironic, horrible part, really, just because it's so hypocritical. It says the $12 billion is part of a $40 billion emergency fund that includes and has been attached to $24 billion for Ukraine. It says some lawmakers oppose the Ukraine request and want to consider separate bills and detach the emergency funds for FEMA from the Ukraine spending. So we need $12 billion to keep FEMA running. And they've already stopped projects and said, hey, we can't even afford to help people who have had their homes burned down a couple years ago. Even though we promised you the money and it's been approved, we ran out, so we're going to stop helping you. They need $12 billion for that. And in the same bill, they're asking for double, $24 billion to go over to Ukraine. And there's more support for the Ukraine money than there is for the $12 billion to help Americans who have lost everything, literally everything. Same with the firefighter raises. They want $60 million to keep the raises going to January 1st until they can figure out a permanent fix. That's the brief update on that. That's what they are fighting over. And again, Congress is out of session until, I guess, this week they start coming back. They want $60 million and they're debating that. And again, it's attached in this $24 billion that's supposed to go to Ukraine as well. Reporters asked Biden on August 25th, while he was in California, if he would agree to divide the disaster funds for Americans in FEMA away from the $24 billion for Ukraine. And they said, what are the chances you would be willing to do that? In which Biden replied, none. Which I don't know why you have to have these things put together. Why can't we just separate them and vote on them on an individual basis? Because as always, and I talk about it all the time, you're holding a lot of things hostage when you do things like that. You say, well, you can't get your FEMA money unless you vote for this. Or, hey, you can't get your firefighter pay unless you vote for this. And what ultimately ends up happening is the things that are being held hostage don't get passed. They get stripped out of the bill. And the things that were holding them hostage pass. And then you just play this game of hopscotch, jumping from bill to bill, holding these what I would consider priority items hostage for items that you just need to get passed through. They did that with the Tim Hart Act probably six times, and they've been doing that with this Paycheck Protection Act that they are supposed to vote on here in the next couple weeks. Of course, the director of FEMA uses a phrase that I don't really like, but I'm gonna pass it on because I like to point out when people use these types of language, I guess. But Criswell, out of FEMA, said that this is our new normal when she was giving a speech at the White House. So running out of money for United States citizens, but giving money to wars in Europe is the new normal. And that's what FEMA is saying. Hey, this is the new normal. We're going to have to live with this now. So get used to it, America. Get used to it. This is just the new normal, which is this is why I don't like this language. Everybody knows that 2.5 years ago, this language arrived in the United States and everybody was saying, hey, this is the new normal. What I don't like about it is that's the worst way of saying it's different now. which is what they're saying. They're not saying, hey, this is normal now. They're saying it's a new normal, which means it's not normal. So they're actually saying, hey, everything's different now. But you have used clever terminology to make you think, oh, no, it's the new normal. It's normal, but it's the new normal. When you break that sentence down, it's government officials telling you that it's different now. I don't know. That sort of stuff bugs me. It's like 1984 speech where they say war is peace and, you know, things like that. But they claim that it is that and was quoted saying, quote, we don't have a typical operational season like we've had in the past. We started with atmospheric rivers in California in January, extreme tornadoes in the spring to wildfires, which, again, it's the slowest season since 1998. And now we are at a peak hurricane season. And we have had an unprecedented number of disaster requests from governors. That is true. A lot of the state governors are fairly quick to ask for disaster relief these days, more so than they did in the past. And again, I understand why. They need money. Like, they need money. There's not a lot of money going around right now. And so if you file for a disaster, you get those federal funds coming in. And what's happening is more and more governors are doing this around the nation, which in turn, that will deplete some of those funds that have been set aside. But ultimately, what's happening is you are now taking money away from past disasters where people are still living in RVs because their homes burnt down. And you're just telling them, sorry, you're no longer a priority. We have other things to do. It says that Congress has approved previous requests for emergency disaster funds with little opposition. However, attaching it to the Ukraine aid bill could complicate and delay its approval. Without emergency cash, the disaster fund is expected to receive $20 billion as its annual appropriation on October 1st when the fiscal 2024 year begins. Now, if you're unaware, the federal fiscal year starts October 1st. So they're asking basically for $12 billion for the rest of September. And then on October 1st, they get another $20 billion, which still is less than what they're trying to send to Ukraine this week for their entire annual budget, which that just continues to blow my mind how much money is getting thrown around. Again, I find that all very interesting. It looks like a combination of governors requesting emergency disaster relief, wasteful spending, and other things have drawn down this FEMA fund. And ultimately, I would like to know, like, do operations cease in the Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak area, the campfire in California, all these other places that had disasters that have been asking for FEMA funds, is that over now? But obviously, they have enough money and priority to go send FEMA people to Burning Man to rescue people who have muddy shoes and are freaking out because they didn't prepare, because they just went for a debaucherous weekend in the desert and they didn't bring enough water and they didn't bring enough food because they all expected the vendors to provide that for them. But of course, the power goes out and everybody's just focused on trying to stay warm and not getting sick. So FEMA comes in. So sorry to everybody who's having their disaster relief funds stripped from them. We had to go save everybody at Burning Man. We got to keep the music going in the desert. Get those DJs back on stage. So we'll see what happens. This has now just fallen into the category of the Paycheck Protection Act for the wildland firefighters. We'll just have to wait and see if Congress approves anything. And if not, it gets kicked down the road. And if they can agree on nothing, then the government shuts down October 1st. We'll have to see. It's just a game of cat and mouse all the time while the American citizens watch money get wasted all over the place. And then they're told, sorry, we can't help you. We're not going to help you anymore. Even though we told you we were going to help you and the money's been approved, we just can no longer do that. And people in Maui who are now living in RVs in 100-degree heat. When they travel into town for groceries, they see FEMA representatives staying at five-star resorts. Totally worth talking about. The Pacific Northwest and the Great Lakes states could see major wildfires still this year. So if it turns into a disaster area and people file for emergency relief funds, if they don't get the boost or if the government shuts down, that just leads to a bigger mess that will watch play out later in the month or in a month and a half. I'd like to take this time to thank everybody who's a paid Substack subscriber. It's the hotshotwakeup.substack.com. I'm 100% supported through those subscriptions. If you want to do that, just go to that site, thehotshotwakeup.substack.com, and click on that subscribe button. There should be a link below, and we have a boot giveaway this week. Nick's Boots has once again donated a pair for us to give away to the community. If you are a paid Substack subscriber, you are instantly added into that drawing, which will take place on Friday of this week. So if you want to partake in that as well, help support community donations, get access to all the articles, article archives, and that midweek brief podcast that is on Substack only. Just go to thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. Click on that subscribe button and it'll support everything that I do.
I have traveled this year over all the United States, through the Alleghenies, the White Mountains and the Catskills, the Rockies and the Bitterroot Mountains, the Cascades, the Coast Range and the Sierras.
News came out of California this week about a very interesting case that has unfolded dealing with the wildfires that ultimately became the LNU Lightning Complex, but started as the Markley Fire, and that burned for a while. It merged with another fire called the Hennessy Fire, and then at the end of all that, it was complexed together in this LNU Lightning Complex. This was in Solano County out in California, and there were some folks who said, hey, you know, there was some lightning starts, but we're not 100% sure if these other fires were started by lightning as well. And there were some investigations, but it really opened up a brand new case when they found a body in the woods next to where this Markley Fire started. And then they started geo-tracking some cell signals that were in the area. It led back to an individual who was known to authorities. And this investigation opened that ended up leading to murder charges, all from the footprint of this fire that had started. Now, this is the East Bay Times. It says, Bay Area man accused of setting deadly Northern California wildfire to cover up woman's homicide. Just an insane story. A 31-year-old Vacaville man charged in three 2020 murders, two of them related to a series of wildfires that swept over parts of Solano County in August that year. Victor Serratano, who applied Thursday morning in the Department 9 for previously scheduled proceedings in the case, had new hearing dates set. In July of 2021, Serratano pleaded not guilty in Solano County Superior Court during his arraignment on two murder charges and arson charges added to his existing 2020 murder charge in connection with killing a 32-year-old Vallejo woman in mid-August in Vacaville. The felony case against Serratano gained widespread media attention when the charges were amended in late 2021 after the sheriff's office, working with CAL FIRE investigators, alleged he not only killed Priscilla Castro, but also set her body on fire in a wildland area between Solano and Napa counties. Crazy. That blaze started the Markley Fire, which joined the Hennessy Fire and later merged to become the LNU Lightning Complex and led to further deaths of two men. It's just a crazy world. I can't, like, half this stuff, it's like, how did this happen? The additional charges elevated the case into a special circumstances territory and the possibility of Abrams seeking the death penalty. The new court appearance comes just 2 years after the Solano County Sheriff had a press conference about a months-long investigation that determined the source of the Markley fire was arson, and in a statement at the time said the two resulting Solano County deaths from that fire are now considered homicides. The Markley fire started August 18th of that year in Stebbins Cold Canyon area and merged with the Hennessy fire and then was ultimately complexed. Two fire victims were later found in their homes in unincorporated Solano County as a result of the fire. 82-year-old Douglas Mai and 64-year-old James Bone were both found deceased in the area. Additionally, Castro's body was discovered in the Stebbins Cold Canyon area, leading to Serrateno's arrest mid-September 2020. The sheriff's office said that they believe Serrateno deliberately set the Markley fire in an attempt to conceal the murder. Now, this is where they get into the details of how this all went down. And I want to start by saying, like, when you're out in the woods on wildfires, on occasion you find some crazy stuff. Like, we've found burnt out cars in the middle of the wilderness where there's no roads. We've found pistols just ditched halfway up a mountain. You just find stuff out there. When you find dope grows out in California, that's like some of that stuff's booby trapped. And it's just amazing the types of things that you find out in the forest when you're wandering around. And a lot of it is, you know, from years past, maybe, you know, something fell out of someone's pocket or this or that. But you also can't help but think, like, oh, someone ditched these pistols out here probably because they were used in a crime or something or another. Point being, the wilderness is vast. And as I talked about on the Substack this spring, the conversation about how many people go missing in our national forest, it's a crazy amount of people go missing in our national forest, so much so that the FBI doesn't even keep track. They don't even have a national database of how many people go missing in the United States wilderness because they say we're just not going to track that sort of thing. It's thousands of people go missing yearly. Anyway, if you want to check that out, you can go to the Substack, hotshotwakeup.substack.com, and we covered that quite a bit. So the sheriff started investigating all this, the fire first, then they knew they had a missing person, so they were investigating that as well. And they slowly put the pieces together, and the links to these two events started getting closer and closer and closer until they started realizing, wait a second, this Markley fire and this missing person who we think was murdered both have the same origin. It starts by saying police records indicated that on the night of August 18th, Vacaville police officers responded to a call of an abandoned vehicle. The vehicle was linked to Castro, and she had been reported missing hours earlier. With her cell phone off and no activity on her social media account, her disappearance spurred the development of detectives that began an intense investigation in search for these answers. Over the course of the investigation, detectives learned that Castro allegedly met with Serrateno online and had arranged to meet in Vacaville for a date on August 16th. According to the sheriffs, Serrateno lived on Vine Street. Though interviews with the suspect, detectives learned that Castro and Serrateno met at his home. They also got access to traffic cameras and said that on that night in the area, it captured Castro alone in her vehicle, turning onto Depot Street, and that was the last time she would be seen alive on any of these cameras. What we believe is, said the sheriff, is that they met online and agreed to a prearranged date. Like, that doesn't bode well for online dating. What a nightmare. She went to his home on Vine Street, and sometime later in that evening, that vehicle pulls onto another street, parks, and a short time later, a male gets out and walks away in the direction of that street. Detectives interviewed Serrateno once before his arrest, and after they obtained records for Castro's cell phone and learned that the suspect was the last person with whom she had phone contact and determined he was the person of interest in this case. Using cell phone data and analytic software, detectives were able to put the suspect in the area of Homestead Trail at the base of Monticello Dam near the lake Berryessa on August 16th, the same area where the LNU complex fire burned on August 19th. Once detectives received the information obtained through search warrants, it led them to the area on September 2nd, where they conducted a grid search and they found a badly burned body. Using DNA analysis and evidence collected from the scene, they were able to get a positive identification and ruled it a homicide. And what sheriffs believe happened is after he basically kidnapped this gal, allegedly murdered her, and then took her to a canyon and tried to dispose of the body, which ended up leading to a wildfire that led to two more individuals dying in their homes. I think if this individual gets the death penalty, it'll be, you know, that's quite rare for California to do something like that. So I actually don't think he'll get the death penalty, but it's on the table. As I've said before, fires can start all sorts of ways, whether it's intentional arson, accidental fires, lightning, things happening with electrical infrastructure and power infrastructure that end up starting fires. And you also have people, murderers, you also have people who try to dispose of their crimes in the woods and end up starting a massive wildfire. I thought it was a fascinating story to cover. It's not really something you hear of very often. You know, you hear of lost hikers starting fires that end up being wildfires, escaped campfires, people dragging chains, and then your arsonists, which we've talked about before. A lot of them are schizophrenics. Some of them are on drugs. Others do it intentionally with malice and just want to see things burn. And the sheriff's office says that this was intentional because the arson charges have been filed in this case. So just a very interesting story. You don't hear it often. And having taken place in California, where there's a lot of chatter and talk about wildfire and why they're happening, so on and so forth, this is an example of a fire that burned very large and cost a lot of money. And it's looking like the cause of it all was an individual, Mr. Certeno, who was out in the woods trying to conceal the evidence of his crimes.
I have traveled this year over all the United States, through the Alleghenies, the White Mountains, and the Catskills, the Rockies and the Bitterroot Mountains, the Cascades, the Coast Range, and the Sierras.
Moving now into the operational update happening around the United States. Like I said, it has been kind of a lull period, especially in the western United States. Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, these other places have had wildfires for sure. But the amount of wildfire has slowed a bit as moisture has pushed across the United States and cooler temperatures kind of docked themselves on the West Coast for a little bit here. There are still a tremendous amount of resources out and committed, and there are a lot of wildfires that are at, you know, a spattering of containment levels. But again, I don't think fire season is over. If you just look at a couple places, you can look at Colorado, where they have a bunch of warm weather coming through. They have fire weather watches in place today. Yes, they have a healthy, robust grass crop and got a lot of moisture this winter. A lot of it with the help of cloud seeding systems that were installed over the last year, where they put these things on mountaintops, and when a storm system rolls through, they fire silver iodide up into the atmosphere, and that bonds to these water molecules, and you get increased precipitation in these areas. It is a warming trend through Colorado, and things are starting to dry out a little bit. Now, not a lot has come out of that, but saying the potential is there. And also in the Great Lakes states, today Wisconsin is under a red flag warning, which you don't see that often. And I was in Wisconsin not too long ago talking to locals. They all day long, all I heard was chippers. And it's just locals clearing their property and having people come in and chip all this material. Out there, it's mostly balsam fir it's this species that is kind of an undergrowth species. It chokes out your forest, and it's the absolute perfect ladder fuel to burn all of your really nice, robust pine trees that you have in the area. So they're aware that fire is a danger over there, and they're trying to be proactive, but it's very warm. They're in the 90s. It's been dry, so we'll see what comes out of that as well. So there's potential still around the nation. On an operational update, I'll start quickly with Maui because I haven't talked about it in a week or so. And basically, where I'm at now is there's a lot of weird stuff happening down in Maui. There just is. There's still closures around Lahaina. Homeowners aren't allowed to go in and see the remains of their home or access anything that might still be there. The media still has limited access to the area as well. There's still hundreds of people who have been determined to still be missing. And when it comes to details of the fire, we reported on the Substack that Maui County has sued Hawaiian Electric, and they blamed them for possibly re-energizing the lines while they were on the ground. Now, since we were talking about that, Hawaiian Electric came out and said, we did not recharge the lines. And not only that, we had the power shut off 6 hours before the first wildfires were reported, and claim that they have evidence to show that they did not turn the power back on throughout the wind event and leading up to the fires. So that just shows that there's going to be a massive court case, and this is going to be litigated for a very long time because both parties seem like they're going to fight this thing. The other things that have come up and I've allowed to play out and see what the details are and the evidence is, it does look like they didn't turn the water on. Like the hydrants didn't have any water. And that was determined by an individual who was in charge of water in Maui. I've watched a couple interviews with this individual and basically saying that water is sacred and we weren't really sure if, you know, we wanted to turn the water on for this event because we have to be very careful about how we use water. And then meanwhile, and I'm laughing because it's so crazy and it's so ridiculous that if I don't try to find the humor and the stupidity of what the hell this individual did, you know, I'm going to lose my mind. So what ended up happening is 5 hours went by before they determined to turn the water on. This individual has since resigned. The other complaint is that there was a lot of roadblocks. There were all these stories of people jumping into the ocean and saying they couldn't escape the fire, so everybody jumped into the ocean. It's now coming out that some of these people were interviewed and they said, we turned around and went to the ocean to jump in because all the roads were closed and we weren't allowed to leave. That's a concern. I haven't gotten all the details on that, but there's enough out now where it seems to be the case that there was a lot of roadblocks and things shut down. The other interesting thing is all the FEMA people that are currently on Hawaii and a lot of these fire officials were on a different island the day the fire started doing a wildfire disaster scenario for some annual training that was taking place, which may have slowed the response down, which is ironic that training for a wildfire disaster actually slowed your response for a wildfire disaster. But that's what's going on down in Maui. Just a quick catch up on what's happening down there. If we look at the broader view of the United States, we're still at a national preparedness level 4. Not a lot of new fires. There were 38 new fires across the nation yesterday, which is minimal activity. Especially end of August going into September. That's crazy. And as I talked about at the top of the show, year to date, we're at about 1.9-ish, maybe getting close to 2 million acres burned. And if you look at the historic data, you have to go all the way back to 1998 to find a season that has less than 2 million acres burned. And before that, it's in the 80s. So overall, very, very slow fire season. It has been a destructive fire season when it comes to, you know, devastation to homes and communities. And there's also been a rise in human-caused fires as well. So less acres, more human-caused fires. It's a weird year. It is. It's just a kind of a strange year. Okay, yesterday there were 4 new large fires. There are 62 uncontained large fires in the nation. 10 type 1 and type 2 teams combined and 11 complex IMTs are committed to these incidents. The southern area is at a preparedness level 5, which is the highest level. They had no new fires. Like I said, there's a lull happening across the United States. And a lot of their fires are starting to get contained and are at a level where you can start saying, okay, they got a pretty good handle on this. We've talked about it before, this Tiger Island fire, it ripped 32,000 acres, but they have it 50% contained at this time. It's the most expensive fire in the southern area at $5.6 million. And then there's a laundry list of fires, mostly in Louisiana, but a couple in Texas. And even Florida had a fire called the Rock Pond Fire that went around 2,100 acres, but they have slowed down significantly in the last couple days. The Northwest area, also at a preparedness level 5, had 8 new fires, and a couple that stand out. There's this Camp Creek fire in Oregon that is burning right next to something called the Bull Run Reservoir, which provides all of the drinking water, or the majority of the drinking water, for Portland, which is why this has become a priority fire. Great Basin Team 1, which is a complex incident management team, has taken over that incident. And that's just outside of Sandy, Oregon. There's 520 people on it. It's cost $6.1 million, and it's nearing 2,000 acres. There was this Thai Ridge complex, also in Oregon, pushing 6,700 acres. But again, it's 21% contained, which is pretty good for a complex to have that kind of containment in this short period of time. They have almost 1,900 people on these fires, and it's cost $11.5 million. Then you just get to the fires that have been burning for a while. The Lookout Fire, the Bedrock Fire, the Horse Creek Fire. All incidents that have been burning for a while, combined well over $100 million. And then a spattering of smaller fires up in Oregon and Washington that don't have any containment, but progress is being made, like the Pete's Lake fire. They say they don't have any containment, but the chippers are already running. So that tells me that suppression isn't, you know, the highest priority. So there's obviously not a lot of activity on that fire if you have crews chipping, even though you're 0% contained. But it's not like there's no fires. There are quite a bit of fires, but the activity hasn't been significant this last week. If we move to Northern California, you have all of these complexes that started a couple weeks back with all the lightning that came through. They're saying they have 23 uncontained large fires still in Northern California. Multiple teams have been activated for these incidents. The Smith River Complex in the Six Rivers National Forest, that has 5 fires. The Happy Camp Complex, 5 fires on the Klamath. The SRF Lightning Complex, 8 fires on the Six Rivers National Forest. The South Fork Complex, 2 fires on the Shasta Trinity. And then you have the Deep Fire and others. The largest, the Smith River Complex, 84,000 acres, 9% contained, 3,000 people, and at $47 million. Happy Camp Complex, they're getting that thing pretty well wrapped up, actually. 28,000 acres, 51% contained, and $58 million. Now, again, just 2 of these fires will pay for the wildland firefighter raises through January 1st, which they're arguing over in Congress. They're looking for $60 million, but we're dumping money into these fires that cost more than what you would pay the firefighters. The only news really out of Northern California, other than those incidents, is the issue that they had with some caterers up there. Again, I put out an article talking about all of this up on the Substack. It's the hotshotwakeup.substack.com, in which I reported from boots on the ground saying, hey, the food's horrible, it's moldy, people are getting sick, the water's bad, and everyone's sick, and it's because of the food. And in one case in the Northern Rockies area up in Montana, there was another team that realized, hey, we got a caterer that is poisoning our firefighters as well. And after 24, 48 hours, that article that I put up on the Substack, it was read by like 30,000 people, which is, that's insane to me that 30,000 people read that article. But the caterers ended up getting kicked off the fire. it made its way to the congressional level, where you had Representative from California Doug LaMalfa putting out a statement on it as well and saying, hey, what's going on here? Why are we feeding our firefighters junk and moldy sandwiches? And in some cases, not even giving them dinner because the caterers decided to close down early before the crews came off the line. It's a mess. I've been talking and writing about it on the Substack for a long time now. I mean, you know, I wrote about the policy change and talked about the policy change and interviewed people about the policy change on the podcast and on Substack, saying, hey, they switched from closest caterer goes to the wildfire to cheapest caterer goes to the wildfire. And ultimately, this is the result that we get. We can move on to the Northern Rockies. They're at a PL3. They had one new large fire. They have six fires that they're calling uncontained. And a lot of these are the usual suspects that we've seen before. The East Fork fire on the Kootenai National Forest, 5,100 acres, but it's 35% contained. River Road East fire, 17,500 acres, but again, 54% contained. Ridge Creek, 51% contained. Tin Soldier Complex is done. That's at 95% contained. They brought in a Type 1 team to that when it was already, like, done. And I don't know why they did that. Maybe they were just shuffling some resources around, making sure they're keeping folks in region. But it was an interesting move for sure. And then again, a couple fires here and there in Idaho and Montana, but nothing that has grown to a substantial size or is really causing a lot of headaches. The Great Basin has been very, very quiet. They had this Black Mountain fire in Idaho go 1,100 acres. The East fire on the Boise went 3,300 acres. But again, other than the Black Mountain fire, all of these things are pretty well contained. As I was saying, the Rocky Mountain region, like Colorado, has a lot of potential going into this next week, but again, not a lot of activity. They had a Pikes Ridge fire, but again, 245 acres. Bear Creek fire, 440 acres. So just really not a whole lot going on. What's shocking to me is this low-line fire that has been burning forever, but it's not, like, it can't still be burning. 1,900 acres, 55% contained. They say it won't be fully contained until November, but this is a fire that's already been burning for months, which it's, what are we at? $7.6 million at this point in time. So they're just eating up a budget, probably, is what they're doing. They're probably getting a lot of project work done and, you know, kind of tickling it here and there, letting it do its thing, really. Because they don't have a lot of resources committed. There's 23 people on it. But again, the containment date is October 31st on that one. And that about does it. The Southwest, as you can imagine, is quite slow at a PL2. Some fires that have been sitting there for a while, they're all over 60% contained. So as I was saying, there's been a lull, but it's not over because the Great Lakes states have a lot of potential. The Rocky Mountains still do. If Idaho and Montana start drying out and the Pacific Northwest start drying out, which I'm sure they will, right now it's a little soggy, but if we go into September and have some dry lightning, you know, it could be one last burst before you start diving into October and things really start slowing down when the snow starts to fly. But something to keep an eye on and watch for as we move deeper into this month. On that note, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm 100% supported by the community, listeners, and readers. And if you want to support what I do, just go to thehotshotwakeup.substack.com and click on that subscribe button. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, there should be a link below in the description. And thank you to everybody who does support what I do. Otherwise, none of this would be possible without you. Remember, contact someone you haven't talked to in a while. Say what's up to your homies. See how they're doing. Get outside, stretch, exercise, get that fresh air into your lungs. Eat some quality calories. Make sure you hydrate. Get the rest you need because that's how you recover. But as always, when you get up, you got to get it done. Uh-huh.